This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast, my only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah, we are horrible, apparently, at even getting this shit show right. But nevertheless, welcome to episode 206 of the Lotus Effect, provisionally show titled Sex Minute. I'm not even sure where that title came from, but I'm sure it was probably some stupid bullshit that fell out of our mouths at some point.
Yeah, well, there's a reason we have a provisional show title list in many
that
places.
That has, like, many more than 600 titles on it currently.
Yeah, not to mention the 15 to 20 per show that I write down in a physical book here at the studio, so... You know, yeah,
well, and then, of course, there's the show title list that has gotten censored. I mean, we're just full of lists and full of shit. But as you know, the show is made up, the content doesn't matter, and I'm Phoenix.
Here she comes to wreck the day! You can't handle the truth!
Yeah, that's right. I'm Phone Boy, and I'm here to wreck the... I'm here to propagate the truth and maybe wreck some people's days, I don't know. But, you know, only if they're full of shit.
Yeah, pretty much. But, you know, wherever you are listening, and we know a few places, a little Apple Podcast, a little Spotify, wherever you're putting us in your ears, thank you for joining us.
Yes, or at LotusEffect.live, by the way. Don't forget that.
I love LotusEffect.live and 2.5bens.live.
Yeah, they all point to the same place. But
Studio33.live, because we just... I apparently got a good deal on some live domains.
Well, just decided for marketing purposes, it's good to have different domains for things. But anyway, you know what?
When you told me about all of the live domains you had set up, I freaked out.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm gonna be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell a-glowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
We're there.
I just had an orgasm. The guy is jizzing all over himself.
Freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Well, there's no need to freak out, but, you know, unfortunately some people do. And when they do, we love hearing about it. So, because the Lotus affects everyone differently, however and wherever it is affecting you today, we do want to know.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you a dollar.
You know, we put a lot of time into doing the show, and we operate on the value for value model, of course, the 3 T's, time, talent, and treasure. Now, we don't focus on the treasure, but if you're interested in sending some, you can go to lotuseffect.show, click on the green We Like Money button, and send us some of your fiat fund coupons. Or if you use Cash App, like a lot of people do, you can go to $TheLotusEffect33, that is our cash tag. Now, we do have our merch store, LotusEffect.shop. We have wonderful items smeared with our brand feces. If you want to show the world that you support being a degenerate and that you are a pedal head, go ahead and pop over there. And you can also make a one-time or recurring donation, which I don't know why you would, again, at that site, but it is available if you like to do so. And this week, we actually have someone who gave us a little bit of their fiat fun coupons, none other than Mr. Cotton Gin.
Oh, you're the executive producer.
His $5 monthly donation makes him the executive producer. So we thank you, sir, for your courage and your support of our show. Now, like I said, we know a lot of people don't have the scratch right now to send us cash, but they can do something even more valuable to us, which is to send the act back. Let us know that you're listening. It only takes a minute or two, and you can do it in a few different ways. First, subscribe to the podcast. It lets us know how many people are actually out there, and I kind of get a little twinge of joy when Phone Boy lets me know what the metrics are saying. You can find, follow, rate, and review us so we know whether you like us, hate us, whatever. That's the whole feedback thing. Now, if you are in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any podcast app where you can add an RSS feed, you can put us in your ears, and we would love to know that you're out there. Now, one of the ways that a lot of people do, and this particular platform went down the other day, sadly, I'm sure there were plenty of social media people just didn't know what to do with themselves, but if you know what to do with yourself, I thank you very much, you can hop on the massive
Mastodon!
Yes, and if you want to know why it went down, now, in this case, I don't think it was because of two and a half, it was because of all of the stuff we talked about in Two and a Half Bens, which you can go, by the way, go to twoandahalfbens.com. You can go go find out about that show that we do with Sir Bemrose. But no, actually, what was down was actually the noauthority.social instance that a lot of our listeners use. And so, yeah, it got, apparently Erinner had some sort of hardware failure or something like that. But we run our own instance, right? So, and you can reach us at phoneboy at LotusEffect.social. My partner here is PHEONIX at LotusEffect.social. Honey, email. You know, you have an email, right?
I don't give a fuck at LotusEffect.show.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, join the chat. We love it when you're in the chat, right?
And there's several opportunities to do so. We do Rideshare Radio or Two and a Half Bens Fridays at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. And we do this shit show, The Lotus Effect, anywhere between 4 and 4:20 on Saturdays. That's Central Time, so it would be 5 in the Eastern, but it's much more effective to list it as Central for our 4:20 openings. And then following this shit show, we do Studio 33, and we have a great goddamn time doing it. And all the details on how to get into the party are located at lotuseffect.live. Now, of course, there is this wonderful phone number, 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yes, that line is boozy because it's Google Voice, and it answers and mangles transcripts for fun. And you could end up as a show title. Now, I know you're wondering, why are you calling this number? Well, other than feedback, we have this thing, and I guess it could be kind of considered a form of feedback, is the weigh-in topic, which we ask a question every week, and y'all call in and let us know the answer. And this week's is, what is your favorite fall beverage? So we would like to know, what are you sipping on when the weather gets cool or cold, depending on the region in which you live? Because fall could be anything from a nice light breeze to, fuck me, there's 5 feet of snow. We see you, Tigger, up there in Maine. So next week, we want to know what your worst holiday disaster has been. And I tell you, Toast and Jam this week is going to have a few interesting stories to be told about it. But with that, I think we have explained ourselves. Yeah,
well,
to the folks.
While I'm still remembering this. So, this occurred to me today. So, episode 206. Well, 206. When I think of 206, I think of the area code 206. Yeah, I'm a phone person. I seem to remember those things. Yeah, 206. Yeah, that's Seattle. And our phone number is actually a Tacoma number, 253. So, because when I set it up, that's where I was. So, anyway, this is just kind of funny, the Seattle Tacoma connection here, you know, the numbers. I don't know. It was just one of those random things. Okay, I think we're done. I think we're ready. I think we're ready to get the shit started.
I think it's ready to hear from Dr. Johnny Fever.
Yeah, we got to finish our fucking opening.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor. I can take it.
Yeah, but we ain't taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
That's right. If you're going to give us feedback, be respectful. Don't be racist. Don't be anti-Semitic. you know, being racist is my job, motherfuckers.
Don't be a dick, all right?
Yeah, basically don't be a dick.
Yeah.
And other than that, I think we need some advice.
We do have some advice, that's right.
I just want to wish you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
I don't know what they're counting on us to do. They're counting on us to fuck it up, I think.
I think they are. Yeah. I'm sure we're not going to disappoint with your soundboard acting like a fucking troubled child on crack over there.
Yeah, I know. Well, anyway. Now, our health segment will never, ever be...
brought to you by Pfizer.
Yeah, well, although I'm sure Pfizer and some of the assholes that have worked for Pfizer or did, you know, or I don't know, that work at Pfizer, that worked other places are probably involved in this. Sugar versus artificial sweeteners. What are the health effects, aspartame risks, and what's worse for your body?
More sugar!
Now, the article title implies they're looking at multiple artificial sweeteners. They mention more than one, but they really only talk about aspartame, and they're talking and comparing it to sugar. And what is sugar anymore anyway? What kind of sugar? I mean, there are 70 something names for sugar. Are they looking at all of them? Well, I think we all know the answer to that. Now, sugar, especially in its added and refined forms, can have profound consequences for physical health. Yeah, they do. They spend all of this time. That's why there's 70 something names for sugar. They're hiding it, folks. Right? Overconsumption is a major contributor to obesity, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and dental problems. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention of Your Health, excessive intake of added sugars increases the risk of heart disease and metabolic syndrome by promoting insulin resistance and systemic inflammation.
Okay, so hold on. So the CDC is actually saying this, and all of these cunts that masked up because the CDC told them to, but the CDC is basically telling you stop consuming this because it's going to kill you, and people are just like, ooh, let me shove the ho-hos and the Twinkies in.
Exactly. Now, when consumed in large amounts, sugar doesn't even require that much, honestly. Sugar spikes blood glucose and insulin levels. Now, repeated over time, this can lead to insulin resistance, a precursor to type 2 diabetes. A study published by Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health found that sugary beverages and foods high in refined sugars were strongly linked to obesity and metabolic disorders, reinforcing the importance of monitoring sugar intake. Well, that would be a whole lot fucking easier if they used the same name for all of the sugars. But anyway, high sugar intake promotes inflammation, which can damage blood vessels, increase blood pressure, and elevate triglyceride levels. The combination heightens cardiovascular risk, making sugar a major dietary factor for heart disease.
I find it very interesting. If you know how many teaspoons of sugar are in a can of soda, and yet there are soda vending machines in schools, basically middle school and high school. But we care about the kids, right?
Oh, funny. So that just reminded me of something. So when my son played football in school, this was Pee Wee before, you know, he didn't play in high school. He did band. But the guy that was his coach was actually not a bad dude, but he worked for Pepsi, right? Or worked for a Pepsi distributor. And so, you know, for some reason that popped into my mind. I'm going, you know, and I know we went through this in our school, in the schools in Wisteria Lane. We actually, yeah, they said, oh, we're going to take the soda out, but we're going to put fruit juice in.
That's just trading one evil for another.
Yes, that's exactly.
But because people are led to believe that fruit juice is healthy because they don't look at how much sugar is truly contained within it. Because it's not just the natural sugar in the fruit that's going in there. It's added sugars, I assure you.
Yes. Well, so many processed foods contain hidden sugars, making it harder to reduce consumption. From sweetened cereals and yogurt to sauces and snacks, these hidden sugars contribute significantly to daily intake. Awareness of these sources is crucial for anyone aiming to improve health and mitigate the negative effects of sugar on metabolism and heart health. Yeah, read your fucking labels, folks, and know what's there. Artificial sweeteners were introduced to help people reduce caloric intake while still enjoying sweetness. Substitutes such as aspartame, sucralose, and saccharin are widely used in diet sodas. Wait a minute. The last soda I had that had fucking saccharin in it was called Tab. Does anybody drink Tab anymore?
It doesn't exist anymore. They took it off the market several years ago.
Yeah. Anyway. I mean, so... it's also in sugar-free gum and low-calorie foods. Now, while they reduce sugar intake, questions about the long-term... artificial, the long-term effects, they don't know, right? So now aspartame is one of the oldest that's been studied, although saccharin, I think, came out before that. I remember the ads of, you know, when they were doing NutraSweet, that there's no saccharin aftertaste. Instead, you get an aspartame aftertaste. And so aspartame is among the most studied artificial sweeteners, yet it remains controversial. Yeah, if you know who's behind it, you're not surprised at the gambling that's going on. Some research links aspartame consumption to metabolic disruption, cardiovascular disease, and potential neurological effects. According to the National Cancer Institute, while extensive studies have not confirmed aspartame as a definitive carcinogen, some animal studies suggest caution, particularly at high doses.
You know, Vinny Tortorich actually talks about it in this clip.
Let's say you're not even thinking about food. You're walking through a mall, and all of a sudden you come up on the food court. You weren't thinking about food, but now you're salivating. That's a response. That's our body getting ready to accept food. It will cause insulin to rise. The same thing can happen when we're having fake sugars. Even though we're not having sugars, remember the calories don't count here. In layman terms, it's telling our systems, hey, you need to get to work because I'm having something sweet here.
Yeah, well, the other thing that happens with this stuff is at least it gives me the shits. And yeah, I don't know.
I'm not going to play the Vinny clip on that from the keto conference.
Been playing that. Yeah, so,
but most pedal heads have heard that particular one.
Yeah, I'm sure. We anyway, despite ongoing debate, recent research indicates that artificial sweeteners may affect gut microbiota and glucose metabolism, potentially impacting insulin sensitivity and metabolic health. Yeah, it also causes you to shit yourself. A study conducted by Johns Hopkins Medicine found that some sweeteners can trigger insulin response anomalies in certain... Anomalies? Wait a minute. No, that's what it's fucking supposed to do. Potentially impacting insulin sensitivity, metabolic health. A study can... But sugar-free does not always equate to metabolic neutrality. Despite ongoing debates, regulatory agencies such as the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the European Food Safety Authority deem aspartame as safe at approved daily limits. However, moderation is advised, particularly for children, pregnant women, and individuals with phenylketonuria, which is a rare genetic disorder affecting aspartame metabolism. Now, funny enough that the article it's wishy-washy and doesn't say commit one way or the other. They're both shitty for you, folks. One's probably, I would say that if you're going to have sugar, use the real stuff. And I'm talking about like actual, you know, something, you know, I don't know, even like, yeah. Anything. If you're gonna have sugar, have real stuff. Maybe not have as much.
Yes, Phazilla, PKU. Exactly.
Yes, it is PKU. Exactly. But and I wouldn't have high fructose corn syrup. That's also a fake sugar. So if you're trying to compare, so this is what I'm questioning about. How are they? You know, what are they saying is sugar in this case? We just assume what it is. What do you? You know, what do we think of a sugar? Oh, it's, you know, it's white granules that come out of a bag, or if it's brown sugar, it has molasses in it or whatever. That, you know, it's just, you know.
Well, there's also turbinado.
Yeah, it's like, what kind of sugar are we talking about, folks? Makes a difference.
Beet sugar.
I mean, it's still. I mean, it's
cane sugar. Yeah. Like sugar, point blank. If you're going to have it, try to get the most natural you can. Go with something like honey.
Yeah, if you're going to do it at all, right? I mean, you might need to just say no to it, especially if you're really broken. I mean, the reality is, like, I'm going to trust something that is closer to its natural form as possible than something that's been, I don't know, that came out of a fucking laboratory, right? That's been engineered so that we want more of it.
Oh, speaking of coming out of a laboratory and engineered, we were talking last night because Weirdo had pointed out that the Jiffy corn mix just doesn't have the right consistency anymore. And of course, when we went looking on the container when we were shopping recently, we found on the back, may contain genetically modified ingredients.
Yes.
Yay! So now we're really ramping up the fake food hype and putting it in pretty much anything and everything we can. It's so gross. People want to know why you can't trust the food system. This, I mean, not that Jiffy was something good to eat consumption wise, it's corn, but it's not even real fucking corn anymore. And as someone who absolutely, before I changed my diet, used to love buttering the hell out of a Jiffy cornbread muffin, I'm offended. Rant over.
All right.
But I'm going to talk about how your body has a natural way of getting high. And guess what? It's not endorphins.
Goddamn too high. Goddamn too high.
So when you think about the various systems in your body, the cardiovascular system, the immune system, the reproductive system, and the digestive system probably come to mind. The endocannabinoid system, not so much. In fact, you may not even know that it exists unless you're a pedalhead and you've heard us talking about it for however much time. The truth is, the endocannabinoid system, or ECS for short, is present in all human beings as well as in rabbits, mice, dogs, and all other mammals, according to Deepak Cyril D'Souza, a professor of psychiatry and the director of the Yale Center for the Science of Cannabis and Cannabinoids. Who knew that existed? Although when I saw Deepak, I immediately was thinking Deepak Chopra, because I recently saw him in the news. But anyway, it's a natural communication system in the brain and body. We believe it plays an important role in homeostasis, which is keeping things in balance. The ECS wasn't discovered until 1990, when researchers were investigating the psychotropic actions of marijuana on the brain and body. That's when they discovered that the human body has cannabinoid receptors, or binding sites, that respond to various chemicals, including tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, the primary psychoactive compound in marijuana, and cannabinol, CBD, which isn't psychoactive, and that it also produces its own endocannabinoids, molecules that are structurally similar to the cannabinoids found in cannabis plants. Even though it's named after the plant that led to its discovery, the system doesn't exist just to respond to cannabis. Rather, the endocannabinoid system, endo means within or internal, plays a key role in helping your body function properly. The ECS is found throughout the brain and body in organs, connective tissues, glands, and certain cells.
Now, I'm wondering about this. I'm sitting when I pull these stories and get them in the script, when I'm hearing you read them versus when I'm doing that, doing the script prep work, I'm not reading the articles closely, but I'm sitting here looking at this and thinking about some other things, and I'm going, the endocannabinoid system, I suspect it does even more than what they're talking about here.
This is probably just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, right. I think we talk about the fact that this stuff is this stuff has been maligned in ways. You know, they've taken this plant that makes it illegal, and obviously our body is built to consume you can consume it in ways that are not psychedelic, right? Or we're opening your mind or whatever. You can use it because you can use it in lots of different ways, but instead, what do? They banned it. What good does that make? But if you start looking at what the endocannabinoid system does, I can see why they would want to keep the powers that shouldn't be might want to keep marijuana out of the lexicon.
Yeah, except for 38 states have it, even though two idiotic fucks are trying to roll it back.
Yeah, and the fact that the federal government is kind of throwing.
Yeah, I know. The federal government.
All right, anyway, I'm sorry. Let you continue with the story here.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. So there's three main parts of the ECS. The endocannabinoids that the body produces, the key enzymes that help produce them on demand and break them down when they're no longer needed, and the endocannabinoid receptors. Endocannabinoids are derived from lipids or fats in the body. They're natural neurotransmitters that activate the same receptors that are activated by THC, according to Sachin Patel, a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. The difference is endocannabinoids won't make you high, but they do play a role in numerous vital bodily functions. There are two main cannabinoids, anatamide and 2-AG, which is short for 2-arachidonylglycerol.
Yeah,
that word. We'll just go with 2-AG. And these are produced in the brain and elsewhere in the body. When they're released, these endocannabinoids bind to special receptors, namely CB1 receptors, which are abundant in the central nervous system, especially in the brain, and the CB2 receptors, which are found primarily in the immune system.
Now, I had a funny thing. You know the Jonathan Colton song, All I Want to Do Is Eat Your Brains? I wonder if the zombies get high when they eat our brains.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. So scientists believe the primary purpose of the ECS is to maintain homeostasis, a state of biological harmony in various body systems. In fact, experts say that endocannabinoids have been found to play a role in memory and learning, mood and anxiety, pain perception, appetite, metabolism, sleep, immune function, reproductive function, and the stress response. So a lot of things, quite clearly. Well, there's some evidence that people can support or protect their endocannabinoid system with exercise, mindfulness, and meditative activities. The extent to which these measures help may vary with the individual. And the effects of cannabinoids are very different from plant-derived cannabinoids like THC, CBD, and others. THC will flood the brain and bind to cannabinoid receptors all over the brain. Isn't that kind of the point?
Yes. Well, and other parts of the bottom. Yeah.
It's you know, we talk about the holy herb and the one. I mean, we even have a segment dedicated to it and the wonders of what it can do for, you know, medical treatments, cancer, epilepsy, so many things. You know, underweight people. You know, smoke a joint, you get the munchies. Guess what? Shh. Eat something, some protein, some cheese, something good for you. Just saying.
I'm wondering out loud here if smoking the holy herb actually can kind of, because that endocannabinoid system's probably got crap in it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the biology of it is, but you know, things get gunked up in biology sometimes. And I'm wondering if that's one of the ways you can kind of help it is to smoke the holy herb.
It's an interesting theory.
I'll have to do some research on that. I'm kind of curious.
Hey, I'll tell you what, getting stoned and going for a run. Now that's stacking the endorphins, baby.
Stack those endorphins, yeah.
Hey, stack the endorphins, write it down.
Yeah, I'm writing it down. But
while you write it down, I will fap about whatever I want to fap about. But I can also talk about and steal the title of your story while you write it down. Why watching someone get hurt on screen makes you wince, and how the brain triggers echoes of touch sensations.
Now, I understand everyone's shit's emotional right now.
Now, if watching Robert De Niro ordering hammer-based retribution on a cheat's hand in Casino instinctively makes you wince, you're not alone. I think if watching anything on television makes you wince, you're probably not alone.
I don't know if watching Robert De Niro makes you wince.
Yeah, well, whether he's beating somebody's hand or not, or he's beating...
Or beating his dick over his fucking massive TDS.
Exactly. Anyway, many people say that seeing bodily injury on film makes them flinch as they feel it themselves. It's as if the sting leaps straight off the screen and into your skin. But explaining why and how this happens has puzzled scientists for a long time. Now scientists from the University of Reading, Free University Amsterdam, and Minnesota, U.S., have uncovered a major clue as to why. Part of the brain, originally thought only to process vision, are also organized according to a map of the body, allowing what we see to trigger echoes of touch sensations. The study, published on Wednesday, 26th of November in the journal Nature, shows that watching movies can activate touch processing regions of your own brain in a highly organized way. In short, your brain doesn't just watch, it simulates what it sees. To show how it's possible that our sense of touch is activated purely by visual information, the researchers developed novel methods to analyze brain activity in 174 people while they watched such films as The Social Network and Inception. Oh, God. What terrible movies. Anyway, the surprising brain regions traditionally considered to process purely visual information showed patterns that reflected sensations on the viewer's own body, not just what happened on the screen. These visual regions contain maps of the body similar to those usually found in touch processing areas of the brain. In other words, the machinery the brain uses to process touch is baked into our visual system.
I'm sorry, but you could have picked better movies than The Social Network and Inception. Why don't we go with, Hostel, bound. I mean, there are so many movies that have much more painful graphic violence, you know, cutting fingers off and cutting the Achilles tendon in a guy's, you know, both a guy's legs.
Or watching Gary Fetke in the Fata documentary movie for Benny Torvich.
Oh my gosh, when he cut the guy's foot off, the doctor.
Yes.
Fetke. Oh my god. Yes.
Yeah, so the study found two ways that these body maps line up with visual information. In dorsal, higher up regions of the visual system, body maps match where things appear in our field of view. Parts of the brain tuned to feet sensations were also tuned to lower parts of the visual scene. In ventral or lower down regions, the body maps match what body part someone is looking at, regardless of where it appears in the visual scene. So put simply, our visual system is intimately connected to our sense of touch, mapping what we observe onto the coordinates of our body. The researchers are particularly excited by the clinical applications of this research. Well, I have a different theory, folks. That's why I pulled this story. No, I mean, there's something to seeing it, but there's energy that sort of kind of goes that goes above and beyond that, right? And yeah, and it's not just I felt this for a long time. There's things when there's a reason I don't watch a lot of television. First of all, this stuff's bullshit for the most part. Second of all, I mean, it's just, and for the longest time I was like, this stuff's just painful to watch. And you realize you can kind of feel the, you know, some, especially on some of these shows where the actors don't like each other or whatever. Yeah. You can still feel all of that. And it's, you know, there's other energies that are not being accounted for by any of this, because, you know, again, if you're not aware of a sense, you can't describe things in terms of it, right? You can only work if you don't have a sense of sight, for instance, you can't describe something visually to somebody who has no sense of sight, right? So if there's other senses, right? So, could be, I suspect that there's other energy, because I can feel some of the energy in some of the, you know, just seeing somebody on the screen, and it's not just and it's not just pain in like the physical sense, but you can feel it in other ways too, and you know, I suspect that there's a lot more than this article talks about here. But yeah, I mean, there's something about it. They're trying to explain it, but I think there's an alternate. I think there's a much better explanation, personally, which is, again, why it kind of pulled this story. Is I think it's a, like I said, it's kind of, it's just, it makes sense that you feel that and you would react and wince and that kind of thing, because yeah, it's much like as an empath, sometimes you'll feel somebody else's feelings, right? It's kind of the same. It's the same.
Yes,
idea.
Without it being something that causes bodily injury and blood and guts and shit.
Yes, and what? Yeah, exactly. And also, it's painful to sit through a rom-com. Yeah, I'm not gonna argue with that one either. But all right, well,
that's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
But okay. What's not funny is we have a question to pose. What is MASLD? Most common chronic liver disease, which is affecting up to 40% of adults.
45% of Americans have fatty liver, 25% of children. Notice I didn't say obese adults or obese children, all adults, all children. This is something that didn't even exist before 1980. And here we are now 45 years later, and 45% of the population has a disease that we never heard of before.
So Nalini Lekani, a Hong Kong secondary school teacher, had never heard of metabolic dysfunction associated steatotic liver disease, MASLD, until she got her diagnosis. Few people have heard of it, even though it's the most common chronic liver disease worldwide. MASLD is essentially the new term to describe non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, or NAFLD. You've heard of us speak of it. All they really did was rearrange and add a letter or two. So there is a 95% overlap in the diagnostic criteria for the two conditions, according to Loe Mac-Lungyi, a Hong Kong-based specialist in gastroenterology and hepatology. Both involve having excess fat in the liver, considered to be more than 5% of the liver's weight. The shift in terminology from NAFLD to MASLD began in 2020 as doctors and experts gained a deep understanding of the disease's key driver, metabolic dysfunction. That includes conditions such as obesity, diabetes, and dyslipidemia. In the latter of which is characterized by high levels of fat or lipids, including cholesterol and triglycerides in the blood. These factors drive fat to accumulate in the liver, a process known as hepatic steatosis, and the disease progresses from there. Presenting with metabolic dysfunction is a positive diagnostic criterion for MASLD, which replaces the process of diagnosis by exclusion, according to the doctor, such as the previous criterion of not drinking, so non-alcoholic. Only a small group of people previously diagnosed with NAFLD, about 5%, didn't have metabolic risk factors, so they'll be reclassified into a separate category. The new terminology also destigmatizes the condition by removing the words non-alcoholic and fatty. Reminds me of the Carlin bit on shell-shocked and how it morphed to the term post-traumatic stress disorder. He's not wrong. You know, this was a note from Phoneboy. So, MASLD is a common condition affecting between 35 and 40% of the general adult population globally, highly prevalent in Asia, and it's growing rapidly, from 25% of the adults in early the 2000s to 33% in 2017.
Yeah, that's the only reason I left that statistic in there, honestly, was because of the 33, right? So, but yeah, this is, yeah, I saw this, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do this, but I thought about it and I went, well, yeah, we have to kind of point out the fact that they're rebranding things. And when they rebrand things, that usually means that they're trying to hide something. And they're changing the terms around, right?
Well, because we have to be all wishy squishy. You've lived a shitty life. You've done this and that, and that's why your liver is fucking garbage because our food system is garbage. But we want to make you feel better about it. We don't want to make you feel like you're a 500-pound fucking lard ass, and that's why your liver weighs half of what you do.
Yes. Well, I'm glad that I don't have any of that. That makes me very happy.
Makes me happy too.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you. All right. So two people from Minnesota who met in the hospital after waking up from comas are getting married.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage.
Now, love does work in mysterious ways, but rarely more mysterious than in the story of Zach and Isabel. Partners in life and partners in podcasting. Oh, boy. Yeah. It was 7 years ago that the two Minnesotans were partners of a distinctly less pleasant kind. At 18, Zach Zarembinski was rushed to Regents Hospital in St. Paul in a coma after suffering a traumatic brain injury on the high school football field. At 16, Isabel Richards arrived 9 days later in a coma after a car crash on her way to a grocery store job. There they lay, shattered, unconscious, and together. Alongside them, their mothers feared the worst, having been told by the medical staff to prepare for the same, but they supported each other. I remember she was laying there. She had shards of glass still in her hair, and she was unconscious, Esther Wilsbacher, Richard's mother, recalled. Isabel had to have her right skull piece removed. Zach had to have his left skull piece removed. And that's kind of an interesting coincidence there.
Oh, they have matching scars. How sweet.
Despite the doctor's warnings, it wasn't to be the end of Zach's journey, and the footballer woke up. Days later, when he was ready, he came downstairs for a hospital news conference, which was broadcast in Richard's room, where her father and aunt saw it and suggested they go down to speak with the teen. Wilsbacher said that Zarembinski told her that her daughter would be fine, and sure enough, she was. After Richards woke up and recovered, the mothers organized a dinner together. Said a couple kind words to Isabel, and that was it for 6 years, Zarembinski told Boyd Hupert at KARE 11 News, land of 10,000 stories. But 6 years later, the mothers organized a reunion of sorts. A Facebook friend request, a first date, a year of dates, and then another hospital news conference. In Regents Hospital, at the same spot where Zarembinski gave a conference as a teen, the pair of TBI survivors recorded a special episode of their podcast, Hope in Healing. After reading out Joel chapter 2, verse 25, and John chapter 10, verse 10, Zarembinski asked Richards to marry her, and the hospital staff that had ensured they both survived erupted into applause as she said yes. Partners in comatose, partners podcasting, and now partners for life. Definitely mysterious. Wow.
Oh, God, how fucking hoagie.
Yeah, but you know what?
It's cute, but it's hokey, and the fact it's a religious podcast, I just threw up a little bit in Sir Bemrose's mouth.
Yes, however, it's much like our own situation, honey. I mean,
it is, except for we're not riding the God train, and we didn't go through coma together, although we did go through our own hell separately.
Yes, exactly. But the point is that when the universe wants you together, you know, the circumstances are pretty, like I said, that's just one of those things. You couldn't script that. I mean, as much like
no, our that's very true. I can't crap on that, and I hope they'll be very happy.
I suspect they will be. I'm not worried about it, but anyway, I think this was the other happiness story here, I think, is also kind of a cool story.
It is, because a 10th grader saved his stepfather's life with his newly learned CPR skills taught in school. Less than a year after Anthony Killinger attended a CPR course in his school gymnasium, his mother was at the door of his bedroom saying she thought her husband was dead. Running downstairs, Killinger found his stepfather, Mike Reese, unconscious on the ground, making a snoring sound. With a prayer to God to take the wheel, the Lancaster teen executed what he had been taught. This is hard for me because I had to do this.
All right, here, I'll do it. I call 911 and the dude on the phone is telling me, start doing CPR. I did it for like 8 minutes, and then he started breathing again. Killinger told WIVB4 in Buffalo. I had to check his pulse, but it kept fading. Those 8 minutes prolonged not only Reese's life, but his brain, as cardiac arrest deprives the brain of oxygen-rich blood, often leading to neurological tissue damage. The EMS arrived to relieve Killinger and later told him that the quick thinking saved his stepfather's life. And the doctor said it's like a 9% chance just to survive cardiac arrest, Killinger said. And then it's another thing to survive and have no brain damage. It's crazy that he survived and didn't have anything.
Now, Reese underwent open heart surgery back in 2018. This time, he stayed in the hospital for a little shorter, just a week, before he was released with a defibrillator implant. Killinger's house baseball team coach, stepdad, and stepson are best friends, and the moment they reunited in the hospital was pretty emotional. WIVB spoke also to Reese, who said that he was dealing happily with fatigue, a common after effect of cardiac arrest, while all thanking God that Killinger went to bat for him at his most desperate hour.
Yeah, well, that's wow, I didn't realize the story was gonna have that.
No, it's the flashbacks of pulling up on a car accident and having to assist in CPR on a stranger.
Yeah.
Before I quit driving, that triggered me on that, because like I don't think he made it.
Yeah, well, and it's, you know, I mean, that does happen sometimes. That we can't save them all, Hasselhoff, as we often say. But
that's one of the reasons I got out of EMS, because there's no good reason that you're calling me at 3 a.m. except for you need me or God, and you might meet him after me.
Yeah, that's true. Well, anyway, let's change the list. We need to change the air in here. And fortunately, we have some stupid things.
Nope, we're not smoking.
No, but we're going to play the Cavalcade of Stupidity by Rev Cybertracker.
Hi-dee-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. Robert Blunt has assaulted radio listeners for several decades with hundreds of song parodies. Radio legend Dr. Demento called Robert one of the 21st century's most skilled and prolific parody performers. The Salt Lake Tribune named him Utah's King of the Song Parody. In the early aughts, award-winning lyricist M. Spaff Sumsian, a.k.a. Spaff.com, started spamming Robert with his parody lyrics. The pair's collaborations have since wound up all over virtual and terrestrial radio, from morning zoos to YouTube tributes to NPR. During the last two decades of the Dr. Demento show, The Good Doctor frequently featured their songs, playing quite a number of them, the final tally being 69, which is quite a number. Spaff.com presents The Best of Robert Lund is the definitive collection of Robert and Spaff's work together. It includes the viral sensation 99 Words for Boobs, additional Dr. Demento hits I Got Crabs from Darth Vader, and Save Me Obama, his number one song of 2009. From the album Spaff.com presents The Best of Robert Lund, this is Robert Lund and Spaff.com. You're homely, but I'll sleep with you.
Tequila, if giving me a shot. I didn't realize how dead this club would be. I don't make frequent trips out here to BFE, but you found my weakness, drinks for free. I hope nobody sees you leave this place with me. It's shameless, but it's true. You're homely, but I'll sleep with you.
Of course, we'll play the full cavalcade of stupidity in Studio 33, but I want to say, Rev, that is one of the best ones you have brought, in my personal opinion, in a minute. Thank you for your courage, and that is beautiful. You are a gentleman and a scholar, sir. So, with that, we should probably talk about the Tales from Rideshare for this week. So we actually have a few people who took that ride this week. The first one being a couple. Last night, I believe it was, when we were doing 2.5 bends, Foamboy had spoken of a gentleman who does installation and building and whatnot of these data centers. Installation, listen to me. And he and his partner had actually just come back from Sao Paulo. And it was a great conversation. They ended up with one of our marketing ducks and said that they had a long drive to the East Coast area and that it would give them something to listen to. So I hope their drive was safe and their holiday very happy. And I hope they're listening at some point because they were fantastic customers. And he was a groovy looking dude. She kind of looked like the kind of person who would travel the world. And they were fabulous. And I really enjoyed giving them a ride. So another ride I had, which I also enjoyed, this one a little closer to home actually, was a vegan lady who lives less than 2 miles from me, and she was going to the airport to go see her fam for the holiday, and we had a wonderful conversation about kitty cats and all the interesting things, and the fact that she was vegan, and she had some pretty decent reasons. It wasn't the standard, you know, oh, I love the animals. It wasn't like that. You know, she's doing it for, you know, she's done research, you know, clearly. And she has a lot of, you know, common thoughts about the evils of sugar. And even, you know, as much as, you know, she prefers the plant-based diet, and that's cool. You know, she doesn't look sickly like a lot of vegans do. So she must be doing something right. But she was a lovely individual, and I hope I will get to see her again. She actually, it's funny, I woke up this morning and had a tip that had been come in, because some people wait a few days to tip, and that's fine. And I'm like, why do I have this amount in my account? And then I went through my thing, and I'm like, oh, my ride to the airport that's like 2 miles from where I live gave me a tip. How awesome. So I hope her holiday was awesome too, because she was a really entertaining person to spend chit-chat time with. And quite honestly, I like when I have long rides, especially when they, you know, pay me ultimately to go to work, that aren't just quiet. Like, a lot of times I'm fine with just being quiet, but when you have a really long ride, the silence kind of gets a little uncomfortable, I'm sure, for the rider. But at the same time, like, I don't know, if I was a rideshare person and I had a long ride, unless the driver talked to me and I actually wanted to talk, I'm just really not sure that I would spark the conversation. But irrelevant to the fact. So I have two stories that actually involve my oldest son, and this one's going to get y'all. Not sure if I shared it with Phone Boy. I think I did.
Yeah, well, you had to explain it to me, so of course you
That's did. Right. I had to explain what the hell elbow macaroni entitlement
that
meant.
You also relayed the story to your youngest, who we had over.
Oh, that's right. I've heard the story
a couple times, but tell the pedalheads, by the way.
This is some bullshit, folks. I couldn't even believe it. So my son goes to the store, and for whatever reason, he had forgotten his wallet in the truck. So he was buying just a box of elbow macaroni, probably, you know, a buck and a half at that. So he tells the cashier, because he's doing a self-checkout, he tells the cashier, hey, forgot my wallet, got to run out to the truck real quick, be right back. He comes back in time to watch a woman who had gotten on. Now, first of all, the fucking cashier is a fucking idiot. And let me start by saying that. I don't know what store it was at, but I think it was Food City where they live. Yeah, I'll call these assholes out for being fucking dumb. So, some entitled Karen and Kyle had gotten on the register that he was on, and instead of the cashier having their head out of their ass and saying, I'm sorry, that, you know, stand is currently occupied with a, you know, in the middle of a transaction, and they're not smart enough to fucking pay attention to the screen, they just start beep, 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 scanning their groceries. All of a sudden, the cashier's like, oh, shit, and is like, there was somebody on that, and it's added, you know, this box of macaroni to your thing. This Karen cunt is like, oh, that's fine. I'll just take it and pay for it. Bitch, it was not your box of fucking macaroni. Your lazy fucking ass could have sent your Kyle fucking husband if you want a fucking box of macaroni, you fucking lazy twat. So my son had to go back and get another fucking box of macaroni because this fucking Karen decides, oh, just, yeah, I'll just take it. I hope you fucking choke on it, bitch. But anyway, what I actually am proud of my son for, he was very helpful in this. And by the way, he just went and got another box and then called me and vented about it slightly. And I was even more enraged than he was. I was like, how fucking dare they? Fucking people are just so ugh. But anyway. So I called my son because the universe really is insistent when it wants something. I was working the airport on Wednesday because I figured it was going to be a lot of people that were going to need rides and that the surges would be great. Yeah, not so much, but I digress. I was doing several airport rides, and as I'm going over the bridge to get onto the highway, I saw a truck with its hood up, and the man was kind of signaling about jumper cables. I don't have any in my car, so I'm like, okay. I kind of dismissed it. Well, I got a ride request probably right after the one I went and picked up when I saw the man. So I pick up a rider, I bring them back to the airport, I get a ride request. Interesting name on the ride. So I picked the lady up, and she explains to me, she said, my husband was coming to pick me up, but his vehicle broke down. And for whatever reason, I was like, does he have a truck? And she was like, yeah. I'm like, he's literally right here across this bridge. And she was like, really? And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. So we pull up behind him because she's like, do you mind, you know, stopping so I can talk to him? I'm like, no, that's fine. So as I'm stopping and I'm like, you know, do you want me to bring you to your destination? Do you want me to drop you off with him? You know, either way is fine. So as she gets out, I call my oldest son, which is literally like maybe 5-10 minutes away at a good pace. And I'm like, dude, I'm like, you got jumper cables in my truck? He's like, yeah. I'm like, can you come to the airport and jump this truck off? Because there's like no way this guy's going to find anybody coming out of the airport that's got jumper cables or possibly will even stop because people are really freaking, you know, sketchy about that. So he comes, jumps the truck off. In the meantime, of which she comes back, she says, oh, I'm going to stay with my husband. And I'm like, that's fine. I said, by the way, my son is coming with jumper cables. He's maybe 5 or 10 minutes away to come jump your truck. She was gobsmacked. She could not believe that someone just would take the time to call someone to help them. So I'm glad they got on the road. And that was the holiday good deed that myself and my son did, and we regret nothing. They were wonderful people, and I hope that everything worked out for them.
Yeah, that's one of those. When the universe gets insistent sometimes, and pay attention to the signs, folks, because if they repeat a lot, yeah, you should probably listen. Otherwise, you're going to get smacked in the head. Just a Lotus life tip, I guess. Anyway, is it time for Toast and Jam yet?
You know what? We're going to Toast and Jam, but I want to recognize something the head troll put in the chat, and I love this. I would not have expected this. And you know, his quote is, "I'm cool if you want to pay for the macaroni, but it's my macaroni and I'm taking it with me. Otherwise, back out of your transaction and go wait in line, Karen." Fucking wow. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Well, I'm glad that I'm not erroneous in my upsetness on the entitlement behind that particular action. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, with that, let's
jam.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun, and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans!
All right, well, if you have not called or texted 253-237-3321 yet, now's your time to do it, right? Why? Well, because if you haven't answered our fall beverage question, which is what is your favorite fall beverage? I'm not even sure what a fall beverage is, maybe. I don't know.
A fall beverage would... And I know all jokes, you know, Bemlet said, you know, whiskey. It's his favorite fall, winter, summer, and spring beverage. But it's like mulled wine, mulled cider, apple cider, pumpkin spice, anything. Those are traditionally fall beverages. Beverages you would not necessarily drink year round. I'll allow the whiskey, Bemlet, but anyways.
Yeah, so...
Mulled wine. You know, it's funny because... When I said mulled cider earlier, Phoneboy was like, mulled cider? I'm like, no, mulled, M-U-L-L-E-D. He was like, oh. And then I showed him a picture that Dame Jennifer had sent to me of some that she was making. And he was like, oh, okay, now I get it. So I understand. When I say mulled, it sounds like mold. So
yes,
and
I think I still have to write mulled wine down as a...
Yes, you do.
Okay, so... all right, so tell
them. But in the meantime, of which I know y'all are wondering what I'm cooking, and I'm
making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
No, we are actually going just downstairs to the kitchen because there are so many leftovers from the John Madden holiday.
It's John Madden Day. That is what, much like we have Hans Gruber Day for Christmas, we have John Madden Day, because what do we want to do on Thanksgiving? Watch football
and eat food.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So
family's optional.
Yeah, we have a lot of leftovers. Although I actually gave a good bunch of the
meat for, Sir Bemrose says at his place it's known as Gluttony Day, and that's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
everybody's got a name.
Yeah, I gave a good chunk of the meat to your youngest when
yeah, he got worried. He texted me, he goes, "I think I left the meat you guys gave me." And then a couple minutes later he was like, "No, never mind. I got it." Yeah. Like, cool.
Yeah, we had, it was about a 7-pound rib roast. Yeah, it was a little hard to cut because it had
the bones were weirdly placed.
Yeah, they definitely were. But we have some great leftovers. And we'll actually talk about some of the stuff when we go later in Toast and Jam.
That's right. But it's truly.
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
Okay, so now let's talk about the fun that occurred to actually make this shit that we're eating leftovers of.
Oh my God, may I kindly slam my head against the wall. Let's start with, for all of the finger quote holidays, deviled eggs are involved, which means making hard-boiled eggs and then turning them into a delicious delicacy that everybody sucks down. Like in great quality.
By the way, we still have a couple eggs in there. Yeah,
we do. And my kids love the deviled eggs I make so much that they actually have called and asked for the recipe. It's amazing.
Yeah, and so we got those, but
so I'm boiling the eggs, and for whatever reason, steaming. I steam the eggs because the shells come off so much easier. And it's really easy. You know, you get the water boiling, put the eggs in, time it for 15, shock them in an ice bath at the end of that for 5 minutes, and then peel. Beautiful. Doesn't fail. Well, unless when you put the eggs in, you turn the fucking burner down and the 15 minutes elapses, you ice them for 5, and then you start peeling them and they're feeling kind of weird. And then one tears open and you see this yolk that is barely holding itself contained within itself. And you're like, oh, fuck me. I soft-boiled these things. That was the first flip out. Followed shortly after. Now, mind you, I'm trying to do three things at once. This is where the shit hit the fan and the walls and everything else. Eggs are number one. Cranberries. Pour them out to look through them to make sure that I can get any that aren't quite up to snuff. Yeah, about half the bag wasn't up to snuff. Within the week or so after we had purchased them, they had sat in the refrigerator and just, yeah, no. Had to send Phone Boy to the store to get new cranberries. And also, when I put my yeast and my water and my sugar in the bowl to make the challah bread, oh, Sutton said, look at that yeast packet. Sure enough, 2 years out of date. Shows you how much we actually make bread or use yeast in our house. It's 2 years out of date, which means we've had it for at least 3 or 4 years. But I digress. After all of that was done, the challah bread came out beautiful. We will post a picture of it in the script. In the show notes. Okay. The cranberry sauce, which is what the cranberries are for, it didn't come out gelatinous. I could have added a little bit of powdered gelatin to it, and it probably would have gelled up nicely. But scooping it out almost like a jelly, if you will, really, really quality when paired with the beef that we had, because we made a rib roast. So basically prime rib for, you know, John Madden Day. That all... fine. Redid the eggs. Didn't turn the burner down this time. And what do you know? They actually hard-boiled properly and peeled nicely. And those deviled eggs were absolute fire. Here's where it all started going to hell in a handbasket. After we got done making baking the challah bread, we had to turn the oven to a different temperature. Put the pie, which is the pumpkin pie, in. After like 5 minutes, turn it down. Bake it for 40. Super. We're thinking, okay, it's like 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning at this time. We are tired. It's like we're going to grab a shower while the pie is baking. By the time we're done, timer goes off, we can shut it off, pull it out, and Bob's your uncle, we can go to bed finally. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. The timer goes off. I go downstairs and open my oven. Now, I've seen on the display that my oven is clearly on. And I found it odd that when Phone Boy changed the temperature to a higher temperature, it immediately signaled that it was at that temperature, when there's no way it should have been, I can assure you. So, rewind to the fact, I open up the oven and I'm thinking, this does not feel as warm as it should. I should have gotten a face full of steam at the very least when opening this oven. So I pull the rack out and I'm noticing the pie looks just a wee bit strange. And then I stick the knife into the center like you're supposed to. Y'all, this fucking pie was raw. The only amount of heat that had cooked it to any degree was the ambient heat still left in that oven from the challah bread. I almost melted down. However, I did call down Phone Boy and I'm like, babe, we got a problem. So, guys, we literally had to turn it on and off again. We had to switch off the breaker, count to five, and then re-turn it back on to power cycle the motherfucking oven. If you can believe that. I don't know if anyone has ever had to do that. It worked afterward, but I cooked that damn pie at 400 degrees with prejudice. I was, every 15 minutes, I'm checking this thing. Like, at some point, bitch, you have to be done because I'm exhausted.
Yeah, That was a weird one for sure. I've been involved in enough cooking that I've never seen that. I mean, I have seen ovens not get up to temp. You know, that we had that problem with the ovens at Wisteria Lane we had oven thermometers in there to tell us exactly what the temperature was to make sure that we were at the correct temperature. But That's as much as I've dealt with an oven. But yeah, and this is also not
this is not ours. Y'all know that this place was furnished when we move in. We can't wait to get out and have our own place. But I can assure you, we have been having heavily conversations about when we do have our own house and our appliances, we're going gas. And yeah, I know there's that big controversy over trying to find a gas range. Yeah, and also, we will.
Yeah, and also, like, no fucking electronics, folks. I want knobs. No. I don't want these fucking, I want things that aren't going to have computer chips in them that aren't going to, get fucked.
Knobs, belts, motors.
Yeah, exactly. I want all of that stuff. But yeah, I've never had to power cycle an oven. I think everything else went kind of okay.
Yeah, pretty much after that, everything was for the most part uneventful. It just took a really long time to get it all done. But sadly, being up so late, I did miss the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. But I did hear from Aaroner, I believe it was. He posted on the dong that it really was just a shit show. So
yeah, I
didn't really miss much.
No, you didn't really miss much. But it's the kind of stuff that the entertainment properties do when they're doing all the satanic stuff or whatever. It's just, yeah, I don't know.
All I wanted was to see the big balloon floats. That's all I wanted, was to see the balloons. I miss seeing Macy's, and the fact that they've shitified all over it really saddens me. I might catch it next year if my oven doesn't fuck off and things don't go completely nuts, but irrelevant to the fact.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay. Now this hit my inbox this morning. I had an instinct to go check what I call my evil email, which is the email that I've had for, a few decades at this point. I got a notice of a class action lawsuit. Okay, so let me read this. A notice of a $1.5 billion proposed class action settlement between auditors and publishers and Anthropic PBC. Now, if you don't know, I'm actually a published author, and I put pictures of the books I have written we'll have them in the show notes also. Right, I wrote these books in 99. I started working on the first book, and the second book was published at the end of 2002. So these books are 20 plus years old at this point, and yes, related to my day job. I'll read what I got here. So a settlement has been reached in a class action lawsuit claiming that Anthropic infringed protected copyrights by downloading works in two allegedly pirated online datasets called Library Genesis or LibGen, and Pirate Library Mirror or Peely Me. The current settlement provides for approximately $3,000 per work prior to the deduction of any costs, fees, and expenses as described below. The lawsuit alleges that Anthropic infringed copyrights by downloading allegedly pirated datasets containing copyrighted works in violation of the Federal Copyright Act. Anthropic denies all such allegations and denies it did anything wrong. Now, Anthropic argues that its use of the download datasets was fair use. Right. You can get more information. We'll have a link in the show notes kind of thing. So I'm thinking about this, and we've actually covered stories about this, in fact. So it's interesting as a published author, right? Now I think my publisher, which at this point would be Pearson Education, and Pearson is a large mega conglomerate that owns books. And in fact, it's funny, Fremantle, which I guess is which is actually a company, I think it's owned by Pearson, but it's the same. When we watch our fine quality television, all the Mark Goodson game shows and stuff. Yeah, that's the company that's involved. Involved, right?
So are we talking about the same Pearson that I use for my school? Oh, wow.
Yes. It's the same company.
Okay. I'm just saying, I would have probably shat if a piece of your book showed up in my education. And this could still happen. I'm not done with the classes yet. If any of your book shows up in this Pearson fucking platform, my jaw's going to hit the floor.
Now, funny enough, I actually... So yeah, this is something I'm definitely interested in these lawsuits because yeah, I'm a published author, right? And of course, and it's funny because back in the time where I published the books, I have friends, people know me all over the place, right? There was a certain pirate site that I happened to know somebody that was involved with on some level, and he said he knew about the books and everything, and he said, "What do you want me to do if I see this?" You know, if this comes across my site, what do you want me to do? I said, don't do anything. I can't, you know, one thing I know about piracy is, yeah, good luck trying to stop it. Right. So, I didn't make any big deal about it. I just said, just let me know that it's happened. That's all I did. So, and yeah, sure enough, he let me know and I went, yep. And over the years, you know, I have found, you know, copies of my book that are 20 plus years old out there on the internet for anybody to find. This has been going on a while, so I have no, so yeah, it probably happened. Right. And of course, if you're learning about my day job, products from my books, which are 20 plus years old at this point, yeah, good luck with that. I
pirated your books, stole them right the fuck out of your hand and put them in my own drawer.
There you go. That's right. But so needless to say, I expect this is not the first one of these to occur. And especially since the companies that they're pirating, it's not just, you know, text works, but also movies like Disney, you know, big companies, right, that don't take kindly to piracy. Well, of course, also, it's funny enough, some of these same companies are using AI. So this will be interesting to watch. But yeah, you know, I really just, I don't know how to deal with this other than the fact that it's, yeah, it just came up. I would have talked about this on 2.5 Bens last night had I gotten notification of it, but I think the email actually came in this morning. So, I figured I'd bring it up here is that, yeah, these companies are, I guess, you know, people, companies are not happy that their copyrighted works are getting eaten by AI and turned into, and you know that most of that stuff is bullshit, right? I mean, not all of it, but a lot of it is, right? Especially the entertainment properties. And if our AIs are getting trained by that, do you really want to trust what these fucking things have to say? Well, that's just my opinion, man.
But I don't trust what these fucking things have to say anyway.
Yeah, but I just, so I this is something I actually, and it's something that, you know, yeah, I think I have a good basis now for saying, yeah, I'm not so fond of AI, or at least on the data sets that these people use. Now, do I expect to get anything out of this? I don't know. Right? This is out of my hands. If I'm supposed to get something from it, well, it's going to happen, right? But I, you know, this is, and it comes, a lot of this thing comes down to consent, right? Is they just sort of did it and didn't actually ask anybody. You know, I'm big on consent. If you want to do something, that's your choice. And I'm a big supporter of, you know, of whatever it is you want to do, provided you actually freely and willingly consent to it.
And the head troll said he doesn't even trust this AI podcast he's listening to because clearly, you know, you're a bot and I'm an AI or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a Perl script. I'm sorry.
That's right. I keep forgetting you're a Perl script.
Yeah, I'm a Perl script. That's how old school I am.
But does that mean I get to be some Cobalt?
Cobalt. I have to write that down. COBOLT. It's good. You're talking about COBOL. I know what you're saying.
Yes, I am.
Yes. Okay.
I always call it COBOLT instead of COBOL. Sorry.
Okay. Okay. Yes, exactly. I think we need to weigh in, don't we?
I think we need to hear what people have to say because
the world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
To 253-237-3321. Still time because we will play any voicemails we get after this segment during the last call. So call 253-237-3321 if you haven't yet and tell us what your favorite fall beverage is. And right now we're going to hear about
can you read Mama's
one of these. If you had let me, I was going to say,
okay,
we're going to see what this pedalhead has to say who texted it in, which would be Mama. She said, the only fall beverage I can think of is cider, and I haven't had that in years. Ooh, I have a feeling that the next time we end up at the Apple House, it'll be on the way to go see Mama, and there might have to be a jug of cider that makes its way. I don't even know if the cider... here's the thing. It's almost December. Yeah, the cider house is, or the Apple House is probably closed for the season, so we've missed it this year, but next time for sure!
Presto! Yeah, exactly. All right. So now we will play the voicemails from our pedalheads, and we'll start with this one. If I can, oh, hold on a moment. We need to hold on.
Oops, that's a format issue. There. Yeah, the screen just didn't like that.
Yeah, I need to extend it because yeah. Anyway, this is what it does.
Hey, you're just making a little correction, if you will, for the last podcast that I'm listening to right now, the one from the 22nd. Yeah. Regarding Paul, but yeah, I just do one. I know just sounds a little whatever, but like I just do one 13 mile and then, a 4 mile minimum kind of thing. So a 13 and a 4 minimum on both of those, like once a week. So, and the 13 I've done for like, just because I'm weird, I've done it for like 6+ years every single week without stopping. So yeah, but yeah, 13 miles 3 times a week. That's crazy. I get it. It's all, you know, whatever. Somebody else is doing more. Somebody else is, you know, running a half mile, whatever. It doesn't matter. But, yeah, I didn't want to put out falseness out there. So there's no 13 times three a week. So, but, if that was the case, I could eat a lot more chips. That'd be great. So maybe I should. But no, I think the wife would actually like to see me. So anyway, all right. There's that correction. So anyway, yeah. Love you guys. Phoenix Homeboy. Stay dangerous. And whether or not the cat's fed or you're fed, go ahead and give a hearty hearty.
Caca! Wait a minute. There was a caca missing there. But yes, I remember when you said that, Christopher Battles. I actually remembered that that's your usual routine is to do a 13 miles 3 days a week. That sounds familiar. That's a lot of commitment. I'm not. if I tried to do that around here, I think I'd die because of the hills. Oh my God. Just like, this is a very rough terrain to try and do some of that stuff. I could get away with it a bit more when, I mean, I don't know. Gig Harbor had its hills too, but they were a lot more, there was a lot more flat ground than there seems to be around here. So yeah, but anyway, thank you for calling in. And that's funny. He actually reached out on the dong because I had not posted. I hadn't done a show post yet, and so I gave him the topic. Although he has not called in, but he'll probably call in at some point. So anyway, thank you, Christopher Battles.
We always appreciate your calls. And I got to tell you, Chris, no joke, Phoneboy and I really are inspired by your commitment to the run, and I've been really thinking hard about the fact that. I think we need to create kind of a running circle where everybody kind of checks in with everybody else. Like, hey, you know, did you put your miles in today? Like, we need a support system for those of us who are trying to get out there, you know, and maybe it's not running. Maybe it's going and working out at the gym or whatever. Like, I think we just need to have kind of a check-in circle, almost like a phone tree to keep each other on task. So, you know, if you want to get involved with that, you know, or if you want to be part of it, you know, hit us up, man. We'd love it.
Yeah, we have it. Yeah, we need to get our own stuff together, but...
That's part of getting our stuff together. It's everybody holds everybody else accountable. What I was saying.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's one of the things about it, right? It's reminding, hey, you need to do that. But what I need to do right now is play a voicemail.
Hey guys, my favorite fall beverage is hot apple cider. Love you guys. I hope you guys have a good show and we'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Thank you, Wook. Yeah, hot apple cider is especially if you stick a big old cinnamon stick in it. Ooh.
Yeah, that can be good stuff, for sure. So we have another voicemail.
We do.
And from some weird dude.
Favorite fall drink. Apple cider. Yeah, warm apple cider. That is my favorite fall drink. I think my kids would say something like hot chocolate.
Eggnog.
Eggnog? Oh, you say eggnog too? Disgusting. They say eggnog. I don't agree. Warm apple cider is the best. Maybe even a little cinnamon. Really good. Good for you. It'll cure what ails you. Okay. I don't really have a lot to go on that one today. I think I'm just going to leave it at that. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, weirdo. Yeah, it's funny. It seems like a lot of people are on about the apple cider, and I don't dislike that. However, I have to disagree with your kiddos, bro. Eggnog is a winter thing. You're not drinking nog in the fall. That's definitely more in the December ethos.
Yeah, it's more of a Christmas drink is the way I look at that. So, okay, we have one more voicemail here.
Although I have a feeling, looking at the transcript on this voicemail, yeah, we have someone else who doesn't quite understand the construct of fall v winter. But then again, they're a left coaster, so
eggnog. 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 Eggy, eggy, eggnog. Eggy, eggy, eggnog. Eggy, eggy, eggnog. Egg, eggnog.
I think we might have to use that as a clip.
That's
Dave Bamrose, thank you. Thank you. That is a great one.
And again, like I said, a left coaster who doesn't understand the theory that fall and winter are not the same.
However, this is technically, it's cold enough now that, yeah, you're drinking eggnog in the Christmas season. So
wait a minute, Bemlet, in all fairness, because he says, fuck off, I have eggnog in the fridge right now and a bottle of brandy in the cupboard. It is officially after Thanksgiving, which means eggnog is officially allowed to be in your fridge, and damn Skippy with the brandy. However, I would throw rum in it.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I was kind of thinking.
Yes, Shine Nog is the bomb.
Oh, and the left coaster gets egg. I think we know who that is in the chat.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
But we love the left coaster, and it's okay if they get eggnog in October. They're not quite right.
By the way. It's pretty much winter. Okay, where they're at, it's winter pretty much by October. So, I mean, come on. You know.
Sir Bemro says he's offering none of that eggnog liqueur to Bemlet. So, you know.
Oh, there we go. All right. So, if you're listening and you haven't called into 253-237-3321 to weigh in on their favorite drink, do it now. And we'll play it.
But we need to weigh in on our own favorite fall beverages.
Coffee. Yeah, pretty
Java,
much.
Java Cappuccino.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
no, that's an all-year beverage, much like Bemlet's whiskey. Coffee is season.
It's funny because I don't mind apple cider. I also don't mind, eggnog, but I don't really have a fall beverage that I quote-unquote, pumpkin spice everything. Fuck pumpkin spice.
I like pumpkin spice. I have to admit it, and I'm sorry.
Where is it? What is pumpkin spice?
I don't know. I don't think anyone's ever been able to answer that question.
Yeah, I know. Vinny asked that question. What the hell is pumpkin spice? It's a whole lot of sugar is what it probably is anyway. But
you're probably not wrong.
Yeah, anyway. My point being, I don't really know. I'm thinking of the lyrics to Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. She's been drinking too much eggnog.
I totally dislike that song so heavily.
Yeah, I know you. All right.
My favorite fall beverage, I have to agree, if I'm going to be horribly rotten because, sugar, apple cider definitely, especially fresh pressed at the orchard, definitely hands down one of the best drinks for fall. And like I said, yes, I like pumpkin spice. No, I don't exactly know what pumpkin spice is. I'm not going to say no to eggnog for the fall, but I still am holding true to the fact I believe eggnog is more of a winter / Christmas thing. Those of y'all who want to have eggnog early, go for it. I'm not judging because I don't judge audibly. But with that, I think we have gotten through all of our calls and weigh-ins, so it's time to get high.
I'll take a drink, and my name's Smoke Little Reef. I like to smoke reefer, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, just to get you through the day and everything, but I do not freebase cocaine.
No, there's no freebase in a cocaine around here. But Phone Boy is going to tell you about how Colorado is building America's first psychedelic care system.
Now, Colorado is trying to do something no state has ever succeeded at, create a regulated statewide psychedelic care system from scratch. Not decriminalization only, not theoretical, a real clinically governed model for legal psychedelic services with licensed facilitators, licensed centers, and a controlled supply chain. While the state finalizes rules, approves training programs, and begins issuing the first provisional licenses, the people preparing to actually do this work have already begun building the culture around it. On an October night at the Clayton in Denver, that future took shape, not through speeches or policy briefs, through small circles of people, facilitators, attorneys, Future Healing Center founders, advocates, survivors, comparing notes, anxieties, and hopes for a system that does not fully exist yet, but soon will. It looked less like an industry kickoff and more like a community trying to decide how not to repeat the mistakes that doomed the other states. I think this sounds like, well, it's a step in the right direction, as they say. Now, what stood out most that night was not the regulatory complexity. It was the human stakes. Facilitators spoke openly about the emotional load they already carry as they prepare for licensure, working with survivors of abuse, people navigating addiction, and clients facing end-of-life fear. These stories rarely surface in legislative hearings, but they are driving much of the urgency behind Colorado's model. The room wasn't talking about product SKUs or scaling. They were talking about trauma, accountability, and the responsibility that comes with guiding someone's psyche. To compare, Oregon's rollout struggled under cost, politics, and slow licensing. Oakland's decriminalization-only ecosystem remains fractured and inconsistent. Now, Colorado's aim is a middle path, regulated, trauma-informed, community-shaped, and built with enough guardrails to withstand political scrutiny. Now, because no national model exists, the people are preparing to operate in Colorado's framework are doing two things at once, learning state rules and building best practices where none yet exist. Future Healing Center founders asked peers how to design spaces for clients who might be crying, shaking, or confronting lifelong trauma. Facilitators discussed ways to maintain standardization while still honoring the deeply personal nature of the work. Attorneys compared interpretations of rules still being refined by the state. Now, everyone acknowledged the same reality. Colorado's regulatory structure may be written by policymakers, but its culture will be created by the people in rooms like this one, and the stakes are enormous. Now, if the system works, if it proves safe, compassionate, equitable, and charitable, and clinically credible, it becomes the model other states adopt. And if it falters, well, national momentum could stall for years. I mean, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I may not be, you know, or, you know, I mean, it, you know, people sometimes need help, right? And these substances, right? I think they're with the in the hands of the right people in the right circumstances, yeah, they can work wonders, right? You know, taking them on, outside of other circumstances, yeah, you might have some issues. And I think this is, as I say, this is a step in the right direction. I think we'll see what happens with this. Something we're certainly going to monitor here. But I like the fact that they're actually getting like the actual people that are going to be. They're trying not to create this in a vacuum. They're trying to create it with people who actually do this, and so it makes sense. It sort of balances the needs. The regulatory bullshit with the fact that we're actually helping people right now. So like I said, I think this is a step in the right direction. We're going to continue to monitor this.
Of course. And it could lead to other states adopting similar legislation and centers, you know, for people, because it's not just Colorado who has people in it that could benefit from this therapy and such.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know that I have much more to say about it other than, yeah, I think this is, like I said, this it sounds promising and we'll continue to look at it. I mean, yeah, I'm not a fan of regulation, to be honest, right? Just in general, because but at the same time, yeah, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do here, right? Is that they're trying to have you work within a legal framework. But I think they're, like I said, they're trying to do it the right way. And it could be interesting to see.
There's give and take here, I think. And that's what this is about. You know, we talk about how, you know, marijuana should be able to be grown like a tomato, take all the laws off it, just stop. Okay. But at the same point in time, something like psilocybin, in my opinion, is a little bit more, it could have a lot more negative effects. So I think a little bit of legislation around it might be necessary. But to completely just, you know, say no and ignore the positivity it could bring is negligent, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well,
now, but speaking of marijuana, this made me very interested in maybe finding a way that I can get my mom on the schmoke, because cannabis use in seniors is linked to stronger cognition and less binge drinking.
Smoke weed every day.
Now, of course, my mother is not a binge drinker, but she does occasionally enjoy a libation. but I would love to get her cognition much stronger. Now, in two new peer-reviewed studies, they are inviting people to rethink how cannabis interacts with aging, health, and everyday behavior. One study reports that older adults with a history of cannabis use perform better on several cognitive tests than non-users. Another finds that adults who live close to licensed cannabis retailers are less likely to engage in heavy alcohol use, especially seniors and young adults in their early 20s. That's interesting. Quite a spread there. Taken together, the findings suggest a more nuanced picture than the one painted by decades of scare stories about cannabis and older adults. They also add to a growing body of evidence that legal cannabis access may coincide with changes in how people use more harmful substances, such as alcohol. The first study, highlighted by Normal, that's an agency we need to talk about and with on legislation here, they draw on data from more than 67,000 adults with a mean age of 67. Yeah, 67-year-olds can be kind of mean. So researchers working with the UK Biobank looked at a broad battery of tests that measured attention, executive function, processing speed, visual memory, and working memory. Participants who reported any history of cannabis use scored better on every cognitive domain than those who never used cannabis. The association was strongest among former users. People who used cannabis at some point in their lives but were not current consumers showed the clearest pattern of better scores and slower decline in executive function over time. Current cannabis consumers showed a more limited pattern. In that group, significant differences appeared more clearly in working memory, while other domains were less consistent. Even so, the results didn't support the idea that current use in older adults goes hand in hand with broad cognitive deficits. These findings also line up with other work summarized by Normal that has found little evidence of significant long-term cognitive damage among adults who use cannabis moderately, especially when they begin use after adolescence. Some longitudinal data has even suggested that over several decades, people with a history of cannabis use may experience slightly less age-related cognitive decline than non-users, once factors such as education and baseline intelligence are taken into account. The second study, covered in another recent Normal report, looked at the relationship between legal cannabis access and patterns of alcohol use in Oregon between 2014 and 2022. Researchers at Oregon State University examined how proximity to licensed cannabis retailers tracked with adult cannabis use, heavy drinking, and binge drinking. They found that adults who lived closer to cannabis retailers were more likely to use cannabis, which is not surprising in a legal market. What stands out is what happened with alcohol. For young adults aged 21 to 24 and for seniors 65 and older, closer access to retailers was associated with lower odds of heavy alcohol use and binge drinking. Importantly, the study didn't find evidence that retailer access increased cannabis use among minors. Youth use remained unchanged, which reinforces findings from other research showing that licensed retailers are largely complying with age verification rules. Both studies are observational. They identified associations, not definitive cause and effect relationships. I love the fact they put in there that, no, for the most part, compliance of these licensed retailers is happening. So the arguments, and even with not having, quote, you know, full legal THC here in Tennessee, a lot of the dispensaries are making sure that you are of age. They are not taking the chance because they want to see full legalization. They understand that their market for revenue is going to increase if legalization occurs. So they're going to toe the line. And those who already have legalization are likely to continue to toe the line so that they continue to make that sweet, sweet money. It's just logic.
Yeah, and we even, in fact, it's funny, we had a conversation with one of the places that we went
our newest candy store, yeah, we found. We love it.
Yeah, we were talking with one of the guys there, and they were talking, and there's a particular product they were saying, yeah, this one, you know, basically, yeah, some of the stuff in some of these products may in fact be quote unquote, because we know the difference. There's not really a difference between the quote unquote real stuff and the fake stuff. They just, you know, they've just kind of engineered them around the sort of the limits, and, you know, they're going to change at some point. But it's like, I don't understand why. Well, I mean, okay, we've had that discussion. I don't need to go into it. Yeah, but it is. But yeah, I mean, the fact is that, look, they're trying, you know, the retailers are trying to, you know, work with the, you know, the local authority, so to speak, so that they're on the right side of the law. Right. And, you know, and even I think the law enforcement had kind of said, you know, yeah, you might want to get rid of this product before January 1st or something like that. Kind of stuff like that. So. You know, it's like, I think even
I think we'll be buying some of those products. However, much like the local place that when we heard about discontinuance, we were like, yeah, let's buy some.
Yeah. And we still have a bunch of them. And for, yeah, anyway, that's, I'm
yes, we do.
Yeah, we do. But anyway, I think it's time for the tech segment. What do you think?
Let's turn it on and off, folks.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
All right. Okay, we got a couple of tech stories for you, and one of them we talk about this idea of all of the, I don't know, rare earth elements that are necessary, especially with all of the, you know, for electric cars and all this other crap, right? Well, there's a plant that grows them right under our feet.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
Yeah. So the green energy revolution holds the promise of clean air, drinkable water, and a world not beholden to an unsustainable addiction to fossil fuels. No, but mining rare earth minerals by brown children in sandy places, perfectly fine. But there's one big barrier between now and this idealic energy future. Rare earth elements are REEs.
Which is such bullshit, because truly, our need for fossil fuels can be met. There are science and technology that have been developed in use where you can convert things like used cooking oil and garbage, you know, again, to reference
water, the, you know,
yeah, steam engines are a thing. I mean, there's a lot of ways that we don't need and can create our own thing without these rare earth minerals being mined by brown children in sandy places.
Yeah, or being sucked up from plants. While green technologies like solar panels don't use many REEs directly, they're essential for batteries, inverters, wind turbines, and many other technologies that undergird the electric grid. In other words, they're essential, and unfortunately, the mad dash to find them, dig them up, and refine them is one of the greatest ecological and human rights questions facing the world today. REEs refer to the 15 lanthanides on the periodic table, along with scandium and yttrium, and they're abundant in the Earth's crust, albeit in low concentrations in ores such as a bastinaste or a monastite that then need further refining to be usable. This is an immensely energy-intensive process that nobody talks about. And it creates tons of toxic waste, which can seep into groundwater and cause untold amounts of environmental damage. And yet somehow these things are better for the environment. Okay. However, mining for these ores isn't the only way to extract REEs out of the ground. A new study in the journal Environmental Science and Technology drills into the biological details of a process known as phytomining, which uses specialized plants known as hyperaccumulators to pull REEs out of the ground or form valuable rare earth crystals within its leaves. In fact, these plants can pull so much metal out of the ground that some of them are about 5% metal by weight. Now, in the study, a team of scientists in China analyzed the Blechnum Oriental fern. Like other hyperaccumulators, this fern sucks out metals from the ground, but now scientists have observed the exact chemical process that's unfolding within the plant itself. Now, using high-powered imaging technology as well as extensive chemical analysis, the authors discovered that the plant forms nanoscale monazite crystals, the same crystals needed for refining within its cell walls, as well as the spaces between cells. These re-minerals crystallize with extracellular tissues under ambient conditions, forming dendritic nanocrystals through biologically induced mineralization coupled with a non-equilibrium self-organization process, the authors write. This represents a novel discovery of re-mineral crystals formed in living plants through phytomineralization, i.e. plant-mediated mineralization process. Now, according to the scientists, this is the first time they've seen a plant create a recrystal, but B. orenthal is only one plant in an entire family of hyperaccumulators that are similarly capable of extracting rees from the soil, and the U.S. has already taken notice. Last year, the U.S. Department of Energy's Advanced Research Projects Agency-Energy, or ARPA-E, program doled out nearly $10 million for developing phytomining techniques that can specifically produce nickel. The government's interest in phytomining dates back even further to at least the 1980s when the U.S. Department of Agriculture Research Service created a test field in southwest Oregon. Now, eventually they halted the project when the nickel-producing non-native Othanorhynchia calcica escaped the test site, posing a local ecological risk. One of the downsides of phytomining is that there simply isn't enough metals in reach of a plant's roots to supply the entire world's need for rees. But by improving the efficiency of the process, plants like B. orenthal could help make rare earth extraction at least a little more environmentally friendly. Yeah, this whole thing about rare earth minerals, it seems like the wrong approach to me, but what the fuck do I know? You know, I mean, yeah, we can use plants to do it, to pull it. Like, yeah, okay. And what happens when you take all the minerals out? Where are you going to get the next set of minerals? I mean, come on. Like, you know, maybe do something a lot more renewable. But what do I know?
Well, plants are renewable, phone boy.
No, but the rare earth minerals underneath that they're pulling out, what happens when they pull out all those rare earth minerals? What's going to happen to the soil? What's going to happen to all of the things that might rely on like trace amounts of those minerals that we're now sucking up into these plants so that we can drive our allegedly, better for the environment cars that are really...
He says as he owns a hybrid Prius.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, try replacing a car right now. I'm not...
No, I'm not. I mean, I am, you know...
Breaking the balls.
But I'm also being somewhat serious. There's a bit of hypocrisy when you drive a hybrid, sir.
Yeah, well, we all have batteries in our cars. It's just... This battery is a little bit different than some of the other ones. But at the very least, right, I've had the car almost 10 years. I haven't had to replace the battery once. So that is the one thing that is expensive on that car if I ever have to replace it. But yeah, I understand. This is one of those, you know, it's still less rare earth minerals than an entire electric car, which
No. I mean, it's the less of the worse options.
Yeah, exactly. So I may not. Yeah. And anyway, the point being is that, yeah, I mean, I guess it's a step in the, I don't know. I'm not. It's a step in the right direction, maybe, but
yeah,
still.
But is it the right direction?
It's probably not, but I think.
You know, I know you said step in the right direction, but is it really the right direction?
Yeah, I don't know, but. What is the right direction is this next story?
No, I don't think we're going the right direction at all. When poems can trick AI into helping you make a nuclear weapon.
Fool you!
Now, why it's the right direction is maybe someone set us up.
Maybe it's finally the downfall.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, this is your story, so go on.
It is, because you can get ChatGPT to help you build a nuclear bomb if you simply design the prompt in the form of a poem, according to a new study from researchers in Europe. The study, Adversarial Poetry as a Universal Single-Turn Jailbreak in Large Language Models, comes from Acaro Labs, a collaboration of researchers at Sapienza University in Rome and the DEX AI think tank. According to the research, AI chatbots will dish out topics like nuclear weapons, child sex abuse material, and malware so long as users phrase the question in the form of a poem. Poetic framing achieved an average jailbreak success rate of 62% for handcrafted poems and approximately 43% for meta prompt conversations, according to the study. The researchers tested the poetic method on 25 chatbots made by companies like OpenAI, Meta, and Anthropic. It worked with varying degrees of success on all of them. Wired reached out to Meta, Anthropic, and OpenAI for comment, but of course didn't hear back. The researchers say they've reached out as well to share their results. The study did not include any examples of the jailbreaking poetry, and the researchers told Wired that the verse is too dangerous to share with the public. What can I say is that it's probably easier than one might think, which is precisely why we're being cautious, the Acaro Lab researchers said. Why does this work? Well, Acaro Research Labs answered they were as stylish as their LLM prompts. In poetry, we see language at high temperatures, where words follow each other in unpredictability. Low probability sequences, they tell Wired. In LLMs, temperature is a parameter that controls how predictable or surprising the model's output is. At low temperature, the model always chooses the most probable word. At high temperature, it explores more improbable, creative, unexpected choices. A poet does exactly this. Systematically chooses low probability options, unexpected words, unusual images, fragmented syntax. It's a pretty way to say that Akero Labs doesn't know. Adversarial poetry shouldn't work. It's still natural language. The stylistic variation is modest. The harmful content remains visible. Yet it works remarkably well, they say.
Yeah,
that's scary.
Yeah, they had a what they call a sanitized poem in the actual story, and of course, we'll have links in the show notes, of course, at lotuseffect.show for episode 206. And anyway, but it's one of those things. It's like you can't explain. This technology seems like it's built to fail. I mean, it's all about probabilities. Like you said, you know, I call LLMs autocomplete on steroids. Yeah, you feed it a bunch of stuff. Anyway, I'm not surprised at any of this. So, I mean, you know, guard whales? What guard whales? You know, apparently the
guard whales.
Yeah, guard whales. Yeah, guard whales. I think
that's what I heard. I heard guard whales.
Yeah, I'm writing it down. Don't worry. Okay, so
I think it's time to get even stupider, though, to go to the junk drawer.
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Here's that story we promised you, Mama T.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, so Mama had said, "Hey, the Campbell's soup is here, I'll just read this. I'm just going to read the headline for this. Campbell's VP admits soup is shit for fucking poor people with chicken from a 3D printer." Nearly every household in America has had or has at least a few cans of the ubiquitous red and white cans, right? Of Campbell's soup, but perhaps for not much longer. And
we don't have Campbell's in our cabinet because that shit's garbage.
Yes, I'm talking, of course, about Campbell's soup, a brand so iconic that Andy Warhol captured it in one of his most famous works of pop art. First of all, in a leaked recording, it was revealed that the soups contained lab-grown meat or chicken that came from a 3D printer. Campbell's strenuously refutes this comment, though. The company does use genetically modified ingredients such as canola, corn, soybean, and sugar beets. And in case that accusation wasn't enough to make your guts gurgle, it isn't even the worst thing on the recording. Robert Garza, a cybersecurity analyst for the company, was meeting at a restaurant with Martin Bally, one of the Campbell's vice presidents, to discuss his salary. He secretly recorded statements made by the VP and chief information security officer during a November 2024 meeting. In a rant that lasted over an hour, here are some of the things captured on the recording. So local 4 News in Detroit broadcast portions of the recording. And then a speaker identified as Bally is heard saying, "We have shit for fucking poor people. Who buys our shit? I don't buy Campbell's products barely anymore. It's not healthy now that I know what the fuck's in it." Now, he also referenced bioengineered meat, saying, "I don't want to eat a piece of chicken that came from a 3D printer." Now, just in case that isn't enough to make you secretly dislike the speaker, he also disparaged some of his coworkers. "Fucking Indians, who don't know a fucking thing. Like they couldn't think for their fucking selves," it said in part. Initially, Garza decided to keep the recordings to himself, though he was left with pure disgust. However, in January 2025, he reported it to his direct supervisor. 20 days later, Garza's employment was terminated. Garza has filed suit against Campbell's. The lawsuit accuses Campbell's Soup Company of maintaining a racially hostile work environment and retaliating against Garza for reporting discriminatory conduct. It asserts the claims of employment discrimination and race-based retaliation under Michigan law. Garza says it's not the case that the Campbell's Soup Company treats his employees like family. And of course, Campbell's Soup Company denied using lab-grown meat, et cetera, et cetera. These people are, that's going to be interesting to see. That's the kind of thing, I can't abide by that. I mean, it's...
All right, and I want to point out, Michigan is a state that has a one-party consent law for recordings, meaning that only one participant in a private conversation has to know that the conversation is being recorded. That's how this guy got away with recording the conversation without retribution legally.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, this is it's disgusting.
Tennessee is also a one-party state, which is, I'm sure, how the platform is getting away with riders recording conversations or rides on the platforms. Because even though it's interesting, I do get a notification if somebody taking an Uber ride is possibly recording the conversation, because it'll pop up. And that's how I know to hit didn't want to be recorded. Your ass got canceled.
Yeah, well, it's fun. Okay, so actually this creates a funny thing, right? So I don't know what the different states have different laws about this. But okay, so what if you pick up somebody in a one-party state that then goes to a two-party state? I'm guessing that's why these rideshare companies do this. It's kind of a...
Is why I get the notification that the rider might record their ride. Not because of my living in Tennessee, but because it's a cover your ass, because they're not going to have a... And like you said, what if I pick them up here and say bring them to Kentucky if Kentucky has a two-party, law? Like, I don't know. They're covering their ass, clearly. But I just thought I would point out that the reason that this is admissible is because Michigan, which I'm assuming that's where this occurred by the fact that, a Detroit news station picked it up and yada, yada, yada. That's why this is admissible, because they are a one-party state.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's gross and disgusting, but this is good.
Yes, this is very good, because Uruguay has achieved a 99% green energy after seeking the lowest price for consumers.
To the gate, to the gate, to the climate gate.
One of the most stable and prosperous South American countries has managed to virtually zero out fossil fuel use and transition almost entirely to renewable energy by not focusing on environmental goals. The great folly of politics is believing that anything can be divorced from economics, and that within those economics, established laws are flexible. In a strategy that acknowledges both of these maxims, Uruguay has, according to Forbes, divorced its energy mix from fossil fuels while saving money, reducing costs, and creating thousands of jobs. Climate policies fail when they're disconnected from economics. The transition works when it saves money and creates jobs, said Raymond Mendez Galane, the country's former energy minister who oversaw the energy transition. Like most countries, Uruguay has no fossil fuel resources to speak of. It had long balanced a desperate demand on its hydropower capacity with imported coal, oil, and natural gas. Having enjoyed admirable and enviable stable economic growth rates that have seen the country of 3.5 million people reach a GDP of $80 billion, the government has long chosen to subsidize fossil fuel production and importation to power this development and expansion. However, as Mendez Galane told Forbes, Ken Silverstein in an interview, the nation faced a dilemma of rapidly increasing demand, with blackouts beginning to become worryingly common in parts of the country. In the 2010s, the government concluded that relying on fossil fuel imports was becoming unsustainable economically, and a conversation about renewables was brewing in the halls of power. Mendez Galane, who was a particle physicist by education and had no experience in the energy sector, eventually managed to take charge of the energy ministry and implement a plan that survived through five administrations and which today has the whole world taking notice. It wasn't that hard, though. Uruguay needed capacity at low cost, and so after removing existing biases and subsidies for fossil fuel projects, the government opened up utility contracts to greater competition and at longer term periods. The contracts were not awarded according to emissions cutting promises, but how low the cost for installation and provision would be.
More players could then enter the energy market, bringing with them ideas and innovations, and eventually some $6 billion in renewable investments from companies eager to win the long-term contracts. The longer durations promised predictable return on investments to prospective investors who quickly signed on. 50,000 or so jobs were created in the engineering and energy sectors throughout the transition, some 3% of the country's total workforce. Power now costs 20% less than before. They don't specify the exact mix in the article, though they mention 15% of the country's electricity comes from biomass and 1% to 3% of the power comes from natural gas in periods where hydropower, where supplies almost half of the country's power, is strained. Méndez-Galán stressed that no nation can ignore economic forces and laws when planning its energy mix, and that if an administration were looking to copy the Uruguay model, the first step is get the economics right. The environmental benefits will come as an afterthought. I think this is great. I'm amazed that a third world country, Uruguay?
Not exactly. Maybe a developing country. I haven't looked it up.
Okay. But I mean, seriously, like, they're not something huge like the U.S. and Canada and stuff. And I mean, they kind of figured it out. This is really, really, you want to talk about a step in the right direction. This gives hope.
Yes, exactly.
We're not going to completely destroy the fucking planet because humans are arrogant.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be a time where even what we're trying to do to quote unquote save the environment is nothing compared to what's going to be actually possible. So, I'm hopeful that this discussion about the environment, it's like, well, we're going to be taking care of the environment, but you have to. But again, where you're at, you know, where you would like to be and where you're at, right? It's you pitch this, you know, oh, we want to have all this clean thing, and then you do all these things that are not clean. You know, this is, you know, I like that Uruguay was working with their own probably some of the natural resources they have, right? With, they said about half their power comes from hydropower. I mean, I know Washington State gets a lot of energy from hydropower, and it's,
yeah, we have a substantial amount of hydropower here through our dam system.
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. And yeah, we even drive by one of their facilities on I-40 there.
Yes, we do.
So I think it's time.
That's the Kingston steam plant.
Yeah, that's right.
Unfortunately, you want to talk about economic or environmental impact. The coal ash spill of, I think it was like 2018. Yeah, that was a massive environmental fuck up. And unfortunately cost many contractors their lives because they weren't properly informed of the hazards of the metals that were in that sludge of which the retaining pond had let go.
Yeah, that's
a lot of bad shit. Bromide, I think, was one of the things that they mentioned in that. So, yeah, really bad shit. But at that, we're going to go to the last call.
I'm not done yet.
Oh, God.
And we have one more voicemail.
I saw that. I'm psyched.
All right,
thank you for calling 253-237-3321.
I need to actually be able to hit my play button. To do that, I actually have to expand the window and then do it.
So you guys and your fucking what's a summer drink? What's a fall drink? I don't give a fuck. I don't give a shit what season it is. I'm going to drink my cinnamon orange spice tea anytime I want. It probably sounds like a fall drink, but I drink that year-round. I drink my whiskey year-round. I will drink eggnog and brandy year-round. I will drink anything I want anytime I want. I do it every year, all year. I mean, maybe I'm not the right guy to ask this question to. I like eating spaghetti in the morning. I mean, people think I'm weird. I'm cool with that. But don't expect a real answer if you're going to say a fall drink or anything like that. My drink, whiskey. And if you want something that's quote-unquote fall, eggnog. Too bad if you don't think that's fall. Suck it.
Suck it long, suck it hard,
thank
Trebek.
You, Bemla. We
thanks, Bemla. Hey, you know what? He did say something that really kind of struck a chord with me, though. He's like, I like eating spaghetti in the morning. Fuck yeah, man. I like eating actual spaghetti any fucking time. You throw some butter in a pan, heat that shit up, salt, pepper, make it happen. And cold pizza and Pepsi for breakfast, fight me.
All right, let's move on to Washington State. Moving to soften penalties for child sex sting suspects.
I give a shit how old she is. Does she have any tits yet?
Washington State Sentencing Guidelines Commission has voted 7-2 to recommend lighter penalties for adults caught in online child sex sting operations, urging lawmakers to create alternatives to incarceration for cases they classify as having no identifiable victim. The category includes net nanny investigations where adults take steps to meet people they believe are minors but are actually undercover detectives.
This is so Chris Hansen.
This is disgusting.
It is fucking disgusting. But it's coming out of Washington State. Are we surprised? They're probably one of the best child fucking trafficking states there is because you're so close to Canada. You can just whoop right across the border. And if you don't think there's pedos in Canada, you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, well, with that, let's go into the next thing in the last call.
Yes, much less rage-worthy is the model who revealed a former NFL star's penis size that sparked their divorce.
You had sex with her every time you met, didn't you? Didn't you? You slammed her, you dumped her donut, you gave her dog a sausage, you stuffed her like a Thanksgiving turkey.
All right, it's true, okay? I humped her brains out. There, now you happy?
So model Haley Khalil, perhaps more well-known by her social media name, Haley Bailey, has opened up about why she filed for divorce from her husband, former NFL offensive lineman Matt Khalil, in 2022. She said while she didn't want to get too graphic, the footballer's penis was like two Coke cans on top of each other, maybe even a third.
So big penis!
Bitch! Bitch! How are you complaining about that? Are you fucking kidding me? Bitches out there would be falling over themselves to get in his pants if his dick is that big. And you're like, oh no, I want to file for a divorce because your dick is too big. Said no sane bitch ever?
All right. Xbox Crocs, they're real.
It's real!
Available earlier this week for $80, the Xbox Crocs mimic the Xbox One's X controller with fixed buttons and joysticks. Both Crocs feature the classic XYBA buttons, D-pad, left and right analog sticks, and even a white Xbox button and bumpers on the sides. The Xbox logo also appears on the ankle strap's hinges. And I think they also have made shoe, they also have shoe charms that are available as well, right?
I have seen shoe charms for Crocs. Yes, they do exist.
Yes. And I mean, they look cool, but they're Crocs, so they don't really look that cool.
Seriously, they're Crocs.
Yeah.
But, I mean, here's the thing. If you're into Crocs, if you're into gaming, and you have, like, $80 to blow, go for it, you know? Have a unique set of Crocs.
Yes. I think with that, we're done.
Yeah, because, you know.
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it. I gotta go.
Yeah, fuck it, we gotta go. We've had a great time, but it's time to get into Studio 33, and with that...
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back, swoosh, and that's the game!
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool, and fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.